right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, May 12th, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everybody. It is 68 degrees and mostly cloudy here in upstate New York. Actually, we had a pretty wicked thunderstorm come through here about 11 o'clock last night. Some of you in chat were here with me, and I had headphones on. I was getting a little bit nervous, but no major damage, which is good compared to some of the damage that happened down south from that same storm as it whipped through. It was pretty nuts. So I was really trying to figure out this morning what really pushed my red button this morning to talk about. Normally, I talk about things that get me fired up first thing in the morning because it makes it easy, puts a little emotion behind it, and hey, it's always fun when we get Jules fired up when she's still half asleep. And what I decided today, I think we're going to talk about our robots. Yes, yes, artificial intelligence and robots. I happen to start scrolling down through some of my Before the First Cup posts over the last few days, and I see a trend. There's all kinds of stuff going on with the technology right now, so we're going to talk about that today, I think. Actually, one of the first things I saw was a story. This was pretty disturbing. Well, wait, let's back up here. So we've talked about artificial intelligence, Bill Gates, Stephen Hawking, Elon Musk coming out against the coming robotic revolution, and not just the robotic revolution, but the artificial intelligence that some of the big tech companies and a lot of the universities are working on to be able to make these robots cognizant and allow them to think like humans do. We know that there's the Brain Project that DARPA and a lot of the universities, National Institute of Health, and hey, the federal government's all behind it. And there's all kinds of global agencies that are behind it as well. And with this Brain Project, they want to be able to crack the mysteries of the brain. Of course, it's being done under the guise of the fact that they can cure disease, and oh, it's going to make us so much healthier in the future because any of our mental diseases can be cured. But I've always seen it as a way to enslave us. When they will be able to decode your thoughts, know what you're thinking, know how you're thinking it, see your dreams, be able to anticipate your thoughts, then we have thought crime. I saw a story this morning. Actually, I saw it last night, but there was a clip this morning speaking about thought crime, about that Jeffrey Sterling. I don't know if you guys remember him. He was the CIA leaker back quite a few years ago already, 2-3 years ago. He had come out to like a New York Times reporter, I believe, talking about some of the things that he had known when he was in the CIA about us trying to thwart Iran's nuclear program. And he was just sentenced for speaking truth to 3.5 years in federal prison, though he actually didn't get the worst of it. I mean, they in this clip, they actually go through some of the other whistleblowers, such as Chelsea Manning and Snowden. You know, I don't know. I'm still out on Snowden. I think Snowden was very strategically placed. I'm not quite sure if he was on our side or their side or double, triple agent. But regardless of whose side he was on, there was a lot of information that came out that they probably wanted to get out. The fact that they were spying to make that commonplace. So everything that we had been saying that made us look tinfoil hatty, in the end, proved that we were right. I just saw something a few days ago where there was a ruling that the NSA surveillance that's been going on is way outside of the NDAA and anything that was ever imagined as being allowed. And so now they want it to stop. But like I said, who's going to stop them? I saw Congress is now threatening a filibuster for the NDAA renewal if they don't make any movement forward on trying to rein in the NSA spying. But again, they could, the NSA could say anything they want. Sure, we stopped it. What? Who's going to know? I mean, during one of those congressional hearings, didn't Clapper, I think it was Clapper, had said when they asked him how many spying programs were going on, and his response was only God knows. So I don't think the spying's ever going to stop. But what I wanted to mention that for was because, like we've said before, speaking truth and some of the things that we do here really is becoming a crime. And the only reason it's becoming a crime is because the lies are being laid on so thick. And of course, our last bastion of freedom is the brain and our thoughts and being able to critically think and dissect situations and come to our own conclusions. So of course, wouldn't the brain be one of the places that they are trying to conquer? You know, mind control is something that we are going to spend an entire week on because there's so much. But don't think that that hasn't been going on already for a couple generations, if not longer. And if we go all the way back to Bernays, Bernays has managed to brainwash multiple generations since the early 1900s in the buy and consume mindset. I'm going to add myself to the call here. Sorry, I came down here and get the headphones on right as the music was finishing. But I believe I don't have anything playing in the background. So hold on. Let's see. Hey, there we go. All right. So anyway, let's get this out of the way. Wow, I hate that hiss. Let's get this out of the way. I want to play this clip about Jeffrey Sterling being sentenced to prison for speaking the truth. This is actually an RT clip. And Igor, I don't know, one of the Russian guys, does a report from the courthouse. And he does actually list off some of the other whistleblowers who have gotten more serious sentences in the past. But it makes you wonder, like, how far is this going to go? And as we heard yesterday with that clip that we listened to from ABC talking about Jade Helm. And in the end, they had talked about, people who didn't believe in GMOs and the anti-vaxxer crowd and anyone who has an individualized thought that is outside of the mainstream, that is questioning the narrative, the official narrative that is being pumped out and propagandized across mainstream news. One of these days is going to be considered an absolute outright criminal because, hey, you are inciting distrust. You are inciting rebellion. You're making it dangerous for the law enforcement out there, for our military. You know, we've seen now a spate of cop shootings over the last couple weeks, and we had axe attacks back a few months ago. I'm actually going to work on a list for that because now that's starting to grow in commonality, a playlist on YouTube. But, you know, how long is it going to be before they start directly blaming the dissenters or the questioners for those attacks and those deaths? I see it coming like a freight train. It's going to be our fault. And it'll be very easy for them to blame it on us. And we have the rest of the, I don't even think of them as zombies anymore. I actually think of them that, Invasion of the Body Snatchers. I've mentioned this one before. Donald Sutherland at the very end with the bagpipes playing Amazing Grace. And you think he's not infected. And then he turns, he points and starts going, ah, to point out who hasn't been body snatched. That's exactly what it's going to be like. And it's going to be your friends, your family members, your neighbors that'll be ratting us out because we question the official narrative. And that's a very scary thought to me. So let's set this establishment and then we're really going to get into some meat and potatoes on what's coming up in robotics. Here we go. Oh, hold on. All right, try this again.
The man accused of leaking classified information to a New York Times reporter has just been sentenced. Jeffrey Sterling will face 3.5 years in prison, plus an additional 2 years supervised release. Prosecutors had asked for a severe sentence against Sterling within federal guidelines of anywhere from 19 to 24 years in prison. In January, a jury convicted Sterling, a former CIA agent, on 9 counts related to leaking information to James Risen, a New York Times reporter who in 2006 wrote a book that revealed that the agency had mishandled a program to disrupt nuclear weapons. RT correspondent Manuel Rompolo was at the courthouse for the sentencing today. He joins me now live with the latest. And so, Manny, I understand that the judge here told the prosecutors really from the outset today that the 20 years they were seeking was just too high. Is that true?
That's absolutely right, Ben. And it was an emotional day here inside this Virginia courthouse. Jeffrey Sterling was convicted by a jury back in January. We heard that sentencing today, that sentencing of 42 months and an additional 2 years of supervised release. Now, this sentence was related, again, to that leaking of classified information pertaining to the U.S. government selling faulty nuclear secrets to the state of Iran through a Russian intermediary. Now, the prosecution today began speaking again, painting Jeffrey Sterling as this disgruntled CIA employee hell-bent on making the CIA look bad. Of course, the defense asked Judge Birkema, asked her to look at previous sentences of other leakers, of other whistleblowers, so that whatever sentencing that she gave to Sterling would be a fair sentencing. Now, I want to point to some of these examples, the first, of course, being General Petraeus, who went on trial for passing along classified information to his biographer, also happened to be his mistress. Now, General Petraeus only received 2 years probation.
Let's stop for a second. Yeah, you know, Petraeus, that one actually kind of went under the radar. But Petraeus, who was the head of, what was he the head of? The head of the military? The head of the CIA? I don't know. It's such a revolving door. But he gave up all these secrets to his mistress. Can you say honey trap or whatever they call it? And he only got 2 years probation? Come on.
For that leak. And the same, a very similar sentencing for Stephen Jinwoo Kim of the State Department, who passed along classified information to Fox News. He received 13 months prison. Now, one comparison that was made quite a bit during the course of this sentencing today was the case of John Kiriakou, who blew the whistle on CIA torture and ended up receiving 2.5 years in prison for blowing the whistle. And then, of course, we can also.
I wonder if the dude who blew the whistle on CIA torture, which, by the way, I've been working on that playlist. That's pretty good. There's a CIA playlist and an FBI playlist. Some really interesting stuff in there. But I wonder how he's doing in prison 2.5 years and blew the whistle on torture. I could guarantee you that he's probably not having a walk in the park.
To point to the instance of Chelsea Manning, responsible for the largest declassification of government documents in the history of the United States, received 35 years in prison for that. Of course, Judge Birkema admitted today that the vast majority of evidence presented that resulted in the sentencing today was all circumstantial. A majority of this evidence was circumstantial evidence. Of course, the judge also said that Sterling's sentence would need to be higher than Kiriakou, because while both men were convicted of revealing the identity of a undercover human asset, it was only Kiriakou that admitted guilt. It's worth noting that Jeffrey Sterling, throughout the course of this trial, has maintained that he's innocent. Now, again, it was a very emotional day today in court. Jeffrey Sterling did get a chance to speak before the judge, thanking the court for their courtesy, thanking the judge for allowing Sterling to attend his brother's funeral, his brother being a former Marine. Now, again, I want to point to the fact that the prosecution, throughout the course of this trial, went on and on painting Jeffrey Sterling as this disgruntled employee, this disgruntled CIA employee, using words like traitor, using words like liar, words like selfish, and other words like that. And so they...
You're a traitor, you're a liar, and you're selfish if you come out, because you finally, after being part of the machine, have and find some moral fortitude to open your mouth and tell the truth about wrongdoing that is going on. And what happens? You get eviscerated. I mean, this is just unbelievable to me. These people were whistleblowers. I thought that there were whistleblower protections in place that protected these people for leaking information to the journalists. And the journalists were supposed to be the last check and balance in the world of freedom, aren't they? So this, to me, when I saw this today, I could not believe that there was another guy that they have just now sentenced to jail for opening his mouth about something that he saw that was wrong.
Did a good job of convincing the jury to convict Sterling on all counts. And I think a lot of people here, especially a lot of whistleblower advocates, be expecting the punishment to be even harsher, considering how we've seen whistleblowers convicted in the past by similar courts. Now, the defense did make it a point to say that not a lot of defendants get as much support, letters of support, as much as Jeffrey Sterling received. This includes a letter from Desmond Tutu asking Judge Burkema to be fair in her sentencing. Now, we do have to...
Is Tutu still alive? I didn't think that Tutu was still alive, but hey, Desmond Tutu supported him. I mean, this to me just makes me very angry, because if there was ever a question in your mind that they are going all full out, balls out against anybody who is trying to get the truth out there, this is it. This is absolutely it. As our government, our elected officials, all the way up the line. And I mean, we're even seeing doctors, you know, in regards to vaccinations, let's say, it's all a web of lies, right? Don't believe anything that you're told. But if you come out and in any official capacity try to get the truth out, if you start making waves, you become a criminal and a traitor.
Wait and see when Jeffrey Sterling is going to begin his sentence. But again, just to reiterate, sentenced 42 months in prison with an additional 2 years of supervised release. Ben?
Manuel Rapallo, thanks so much for your reporting on that.
So there you go. I don't know. That just really bothered me when I saw that. Kind of ruined my morning to start out with. So where do we go from here? Well, let's kill the Skype first so we don't have this hiss in the background. So from here, I don't know, we start taking a look at some of the DARPA technologies and the Brain Project, and the fact that they are really working at cracking the secrets of the brain, where thoughts happen, how they happen. Can we build an AI computer that thinks just like humans do? And there's lots of time, effort, and money going into that. Actually, here, we'll go here, and then I'm going to hop into all the jobs that we're going to lose to robots. So how smart is today's artificial intelligence?
You may not realize it, but artificial intelligence is all around us. We rely on smart machines to scan our checks at ATMs, to navigate us on road trips, and much more. Still, humans have quite an edge. Just today, four of the world's best Texas Hold'em poker players won an epic two-week tournament against, yes, an advanced computer program. The field of artificial intelligence is pushing new boundaries. Srinivasan has the first in a series of stories about it and the concerns over where it may lead. It's the latest report in our ongoing Breakthrough series on invention and innovation.
Artificial intelligence has long captured our imaginations.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
With robots like HAL in 2001, A Space Odyssey, and now Ava from the recently released Ex Machina.
Hello. I've never met anyone new before.
And Chappie.
A thinking robot could be the end of mankind.
The plots thicken when the intelligent machines question the authority of their makers and begin acting.
When the robots question the authority of their makers, or when the humans question the authority of their overlords, and then we end up with robotic overlords. I mean, yesterday we were listening to a show later in the evening. I think actually it was Anti-Media, and they were talking about a couple things. And I was kind of kidding, but I really wasn't when they... you know, we're having discussions about police violence. You know, here's the thing, double-edged sword. Police violence, yes, is absolutely a problem. These cops who let authority go to their heads and shoot first, ask questions later, is just completely out of control. And so people are up in arms all over in regards to police brutality. But be careful what you ask for. Because the way I see it is we already have these RoboCops that they've been working on. And I found a story, Anti-Media actually did a story about the K-5 now being launched in Saudi Arabia. That's that RoboCop that that patrols parking lots and malls. And we'll take a look at that if we have time at the end of the show. But, you know, be careful what you ask for, because the solution, and of course we have Al Sharpton saying that we should have a nationalized police force. Well, yeah. So be careful what you ask for. How do we get rid of police brutality and put it all under the federal government? Hey, DARPA's RoboCop Atlas will be coming to a police force near you. Mark my words, because it will happen. They were talking about last night, food and farmers utilizing illegal aliens, and how, you know, in the crop fields, it really is like slave labor. They get paid very low salaries, if anything at all. Maybe it's just room and board. They don't have any type of protections as far as OSHA or, you know, employer protections at all. No insurance. It's nothing. It's slave labor. It's coming over here and working for pennies in very difficult conditions. But again, you know, when they were talking about that, my answer was, here are 13 new robotic innovations in farming technology. And don't think that's not going to happen either. Weiss Institute and RoboBees, that was one of the bullet points that they had talked about. RoboBees could help surveil crops, pollinate crops, oh, and be used for surveillance. So it's coming, people. Robots will be the answer to everything. And each time that we complain about it and say, oh, how horrible it is, how are we going to fix it? The answer eventually is going to be robots. I know it sounds ridiculous, but it's not. All right, here's the rest of this clip.
Thing on their own accord.
Do you think I might be switched off?
It's not up to me.
Why is it up to anyone?
Make no mistake, these are Hollywood fantasies. But they do tap into real-life concerns about artificial intelligence, or AI.
Let's release the Titan.
Elon Musk, founder and CEO of Tesla Motors and SpaceX, is not exactly a Luddite bent on stopping the advance of technology. But he says AI poses a potential threat more dangerous than nuclear weapons.
I think we should be very careful about artificial intelligence. If I were to guess at what our biggest existential threat is, it's probably that. And with artificial intelligence, we are summoning the demon.
Musk recently donated $10 million to the Future of Life Institute, which is focused on keeping AI research beneficial to humanity. Add his voice to a list of bright minds like physicist Stephen Hawking, Microsoft founder Bill Gates, and several leaders in the field of artificial intelligence, among them Stuart Russell, who heads the AI lab at the University of California, Berkeley.
What concerns you about how artificial intelligence is already being used or will be used shortly?
In the near term, the biggest problem is the development of autonomous weapons. Everyone knows about drones.
And they were up in the air.
Drones are remotely piloted. They're not robots in a real sense. So there's a person looking through the camera that's on the aircraft and deciding when to fire. An autonomous weapon would do all of that itself. So it chooses where to go, it decides what the target is, and it decides when to fire.
Yes, and it will be using the 230-point facial recognition to determine whether or not you are the target.
Concerned about weapons like the British Taranis. It's featured in this promotional video by BAE Systems, a former NewsHour underwriter. The Taranis is currently operated remotely by humans, but this drone is outfitted with artificial intelligence and will be capable of operating fully autonomously. Russell testified to the United Nations, which is considering a ban on such weapons that can target and kill humans without requiring a person to pull the trigger.
I think there's a fundamental...
You know, that's a pretty scary thought, too, because as we start looking at this autonomousness, it is really starting to spread all over. There was a story a few days ago about the new autonomous driving tractor trailers. There were quite a few clips on that. How safe would you feel with an autonomous tractor trailer? We have autonomous ships that they've been working on. We just saw two yesterday, the day before. There have been a couple crashes with the autonomous Google cars that, if we have time today, or if not today, maybe tomorrow, we'll take a look at. But You know, this technology is not ready for prime time, and there is no machine out there that I would feel confident with making its own decisions without some sort of human intervention. And even then, I don't trust the majority of humans to make the correct decisions. You know, and the programming in these machines is all done by a human. So, and you know, if there's any moral code whatsoever built into them, the moral code is going to be the moral code of the programmer.
A moral issue about whether it's right for a machine to decide to kill a person. It's bad enough that people are deciding to kill people, but at least they have perhaps some moral argument that they're doing it to ultimately defend their families or prevent some greater evil.
While the defense industry is one use case of artificial intelligence, how close are we to building robots like the ones in the movies that are truly autonomous? Down the hall from Russell at UC Berkeley's AI lab, Peter Abil and his students are training their PR2 robot to think for itself.
One of the main things we've been looking at is how can we get a robot to think about situations it's never seen before. So an example of that is, let's say a robot is supposed to fold laundry or maybe tie a knot in a rope. Mm-hmm. Whenever you're faced with even the same laundry article or the same rope, it'll be in a different shape. And so you can't just execute blindly the same set of motions and expect success.
Abil's team is painstakingly training the PR2 to compete in an Amazon warehouse picking challenge in late May.
So right now you're just...
Oh, there we go. So we have the DARPA robotic challenge. Now we have the Amazon picking challenge for the warehouse. How great is that?
Teaching it to grab this stack of soap. That's it.
Yes, we just started on this, and so right now the robot's essentially learning how to grab soap bars out of the shelf, but really what we're after is equipping the robot with the capability such that if you come up with a whole new list of, let's say, 1,000 new items, mm-hmm. that we can very quickly equip it with the skill to pick any one of those 1,000 items.
On the day we visited, the PR2 was hobbled by a broken arm, and there were several times the robot failed at the task.
Oh, no dice.
Missed it this time.
Missed it.
A tiny reminder that training a robot to think is no small task.
So you think superintelligence is still pretty far off and we don't need to worry about it today?
I would say it's still pretty far off, yes.
But while training this robot may be tough today, not everyone thinks superintelligence is far out of our reach. Ray Kurzweil is director of engineering at Google. He spoke to us in his capacity as an independent inventor of devices like the flatbed scanner. Among his many awards sits a technical Grammy for inventing the first computer-based instrument that could realistically play like a piano.
Holy crap! So they just showed Kurzweil playing a piano with the interviewer standing next to him. Kurzweil just looks like 20 years got added or taken off of his age. I mean, maybe he used a little bit of Grecian formula, and I know he does all kinds of cocktails, youth cocktails, but holy shit, Kurzweil. I mean, he definitely, from those interviews we watched back a few months ago, which had to have been at least 5-6 years old, and he was already graying around the temples and looking a little wrinkly. He sure looks pretty young in this clip.
Kurzweil says machines are on track to be on par with human intelligence in less than 15 years.
By 2029, they will actually read at human levels and understand language and be able to communicate at human levels, but then do so at a vast scale. But the primary implication is that we're going to combine our intelligence with computers. We're going to make ourselves smarter. In the 2030s, they'll literally go inside our bodies and inside our brains.
He calculates that with exponential growth in computing and biotechnology, we will reach what he calls singularity within 25 years. That's when machine intelligence exceeds human intellectual capacity.
These technologies.
I want to stop again. Sorry. I hate when I do this because it's got to be annoying for you. But if I let the whole video go and don't comment till the end, I'm not going to make the right comments that I was thinking at the time. You know, you heard them mention biotechnology as well. And that's where all this nanotechnology comes in and integrating biology with the synthetic. That's the scarier part, I think, than an Atlas personally. I mean, I know you guys have listened to all of my nanotech rants, and I've been actually digging into some more stuff that we're going to have to hit in the next week or so about nanotech that kind of really scares me in some of the things that have nanotech in them that they're warning about now. But, you know, guys, I mean, this is an all-pronged out attack against biology. We are going to be replaced. This is what, you know, when I first started hearing about depopulation, I didn't believe any of it. And I'm like, how is the world going to function with a 80 or 90% less population on the globe? And absolutely, now you have all these big boys coming out going, hey, robots are going to take all your jobs. I mean, they aren't going to need us. That term useless eater, remember hearing that? That always used to bother me. Well, that's what humans turn into in the end. We are pincushions, guinea pigs, test subjects, and then useless eaters.
Jeez. Expand exponentially, the double in power roughly every year. So look at the Genome Project. It was a 15-year project. Halfway through the project, 7.5 years into it, 1% had been completed. So some people looked at it and said, well, 1%, we just barely got started. I looked at it and said, 1%, well, we're halfway through, because 1% is only 7 doublings from 100%, and it doubled every year. 7 years later, it was finished. So from one perspective, we're at an early stage in artificial intelligence, but exponentials start out slowly and then they take off.
One such technology is the self-driving car. In the 1990s, Kurzweil predicted it would happen, despite a chorus of experts who declared it impossible. Today, self-driving cars have been test-driven without incident for hundreds of thousands of miles. But
without incident until yesterday.
Are not quite ready for consumers.
Yes, we have prototype cars that can drive by themselves. But without smart vision, they cannot really tell the difference between a crumpled paper bag on the road, which can be run over, and a rock that size, which should be avoided.
Fei-Fei Li explains in a recent TED Talk.
Our smartest machines are still blind.
Li is the director of Stanford University's Artificial Intelligence Lab.
So how hard is it to get a computer to see something and understand what it is?
So it's actually really, really hard. So think about it. A camera takes pictures, right? We have millions of pixels, but these are just numbers. But they don't really have meaning in themselves. So the task for artificial intelligence and computer vision algorithm is to take these numbers and convert them into meaningful objects.
How to infer meaning is not easy to teach a machine, even for this highly advanced dog robot. Humans have had thousands of years of evolution. Computers, Li cautions, are a ways off.
We are very, very far from an intelligent system. Not only the sensory intelligence, but cognition, reasoning, emotion, compassion, empathy, that whole full spectrum, we're nowhere near that.
Robots like this one coming out of Stanford's AI lab may be on proverbial training wheels today, but are part of the steady march towards super-intelligent machines. For the PBS NewsHour, I'm Hari Srinivasan in Palo Alto, California.
You know, and the thing is, they talk about how far off we are, but Kurzweil had the main point, and the main point is when you're talking about technology to then create technology, it does happen exponentially. And he used the genomics project as an example. In 7 years, they had only gotten to 1%, but in another 7 years with exponential math, they completed it. And that is exactly what's going to happen with artificial intelligence. We are in the infancy right now. We have Google, for example, utilizing YouTube and the things that we push up to YouTube. You know, that woman was saying that artificial intelligence has issues with identification, but they are using YouTube videos to help train these artificial intelligent entities, I'm going to call them, to recognize objects. And think about it. We're building the database of our everyday lives and our everyday objects that now Google is using to teach these artificially intelligent entities what objects are. And it's a blank slate, like a child. And as they start getting better at connecting synapses and neurons, and I just saw all kinds of stories. I mean, they're building all of these brains on a chip and brains in a computer and using encephalograms on heads to try to understand where all these different areas and functions are. Don't think that it's going to be another 50 years before we get to a super intelligent artificial intelligence. I totally am on board with Kurzweil in this one perspective. I don't think that his date of 2020 or 2030 is too far off, to be honest. One of the last things in that video that that professor mentioned was that the reason why AI isn't ready for prime time is because it doesn't have any emotions or empathy or anything like that. And see, that's the biggest worry. That's why I worry about when we cry about police brutality and we have this double-edged sword that at some point in the future, RoboCop is coming. Those RoboCops aren't going to have any types of emotions. You know, don't you guys remember Star Trek Next Generation? Data, that was the one thing that Data always wanted as an android, was to have emotions. Remember what happened when Soon Young put in the emotion chip? He malfunctioned. No, I don't know. I mean, I don't think that human empathy and human emotion is something that some of us have. It's something that's being bred out of society, where we have this narcissistic, centralistic, me society that has no empathy anymore. That's how all of these global calamities, bodies piled, deaths, children burned at Waco. I was just talking about that the other day. I'd never seen the Waco documentary. It was horrifying. How are things like that allowed to happen? And not only allowed to happen, but on American soil. And as they start playing mind games with all of us and convincing the public that anyone who stands up, anyone who speaks out, anyone who has any intelligent thought and questions the official narrative is demonized, it is very easy to play on those emotions, fear, fear, fear. Fear, and get the majority of the population to look at us as enemy. And when you have enemy, now it's all about keeping you and your family safe. Kill the enemy. You know, this is frightening to me. They really are playing on our biology, on our chemical reactions in our brain, and manipulating them perfectly as they bring in problem, reaction, solution. Hey, robotics will come save you. Hey, superintelligence will fold your laundry. You know, in that one clip, he looked pretty cool, man. I'd love to have a laundry folding robot. But I'm sorry, I don't want Jibo reading my child bedtime stories while analyzing her emotions. And there was actually a new story on Jibo. If we have time, we're going to hit that up. I just wanted to read a little bit of this, how Google is teaching computers to see. Google is attempting to teach computers to recognize human faces without telling the computing algorithms which faces are human. It is a machine learning problem made for this era of unstructured data and easy access to large computer clusters. It could help the search giant make huge strides in building the next big opportunity in technology, enabling computers to see. And this article was from 2012. I know I've read more recent than this. They were actually flipping through all the images and teaching them about objects and everything. This is a Google research paper. And remember, Kurzweil is the head of engineering for Google. A Google research paper prepared for the upcoming International Machine Learning Conference explains how Google has managed to distinguish human faces with a 15.8% accuracy using 1,000 machines with 16,000 cores and an image repository. I'm sure that they're way better than that now. It can also recognize cats and body parts, elements chosen because they were so common on YouTube stills used to create the image database. that researchers use to train the algorithm. Remember, it's all about the algorithm when it comes to computing. The accuracy may not seem impressive to us. It identifies roughly 4 out of 25 of the actual faces, but it's a 70% improvement over previous efforts. And I had just seen a Microsoft story a few weeks ago about this new software that not only does facial recognition, but it allows the software to look at a face and determine the age of the person. Now, think about how wonderful that is going to be for Microsoft's Cyber Patrol Center, where they are identifying all of the insurgents around the world on the pesky internet to go after and work with global law enforcement to get. Anyway, back to the story. The net result is Google has taken thousands of images, cleaned them up, and learned how to group similar images into categories such as faces or cats. This has been possible using state-of-the-art systems for a while, but those required tagged images as well as a long learning period. Google's experiment tried to use unlabeled images, and through a lot of computing learning process, to reduce the time it took to train the algorithm from weeks to just 3 days. And remember, I mean, we have so much technology now. That was 2012. We're in 2015, and things are moving exponentially now, people. There's a story that came out of phys.org 17 hours ago. Researchers seeking to make computer brains smarter by making them like our own. And what marks a significant step forward for artificial intelligence, researchers at UC Santa Barbara have demonstrated the functionality of a simple artificial neural circuit. For the first time, a circuit of about 100 artificial synapses was proven to perform a simple version of a typical human task, and that is image classification. It's small, but it is an important step, says Dmitry Sukov, a professor of electrical and computer engineering at UC Santa Barbara. With time and further progress, the circuitry may eventually be expanded and scaled to approach something like the human brain, which has 10 to the 15th power or 1 quadrillion synaptic connections. For all its errors and potential faultiness, the human brain remains a model for computational power and efficiency for engineers like Sukov and his colleagues. And I can't say any of these names. That's because the brain can accomplish certain functions in a fraction of a second, what computers would require far more time and energy to perform. What are these functions? Well, you are performing some of them right now. As you read this, your brain is making countless split-second decisions about the letters and the symbols you see, classifying their shapes and relative positions to each other and deriving different levels of meaning through many channels of context in as little time as it takes you to scan over this print. And, you know, they have been working on that at Google as well, being able to scan unstructured text and learn about colloquialisms and learn about how to translate a word based upon the words around it, which is something very difficult even for people who don't speak English or English is a second language to do. In the researcher's demonstration, the circuit implementing the rudimentary artificial neural network was able to successfully characterize 3 letters, Z, V, and N, by their images, each letter stylized in different ways or saturated with noise in a process similar to how humans pick out friends from a crowd. Yeah, and facial recognition already is able to do that based upon your clothing and changes in your appearance. They're pretty good at it. Or find the right key from a ring of similar keys. The simple neural circuitry was able to correctly classify simple images. While the circuit was very small compared to practical networks, it is big enough to prove the concept of practicality. According to Gina Adam, as interest grows in the technology, so will research and momentum. And as more solutions to the technological challenges are proposed, the technology will be able to make it to the market sooner. Wow, I am just so excited. And yes, Mr. Joe Friday, if you're out there, this is using a technology that you dropped me a link on called the Memristor. Key to this technology is the memristor, a combination of memory and resistor, an electronic component whose resistance changes depending on the direction of the flow of the electrical charge. Unlike conventional transistors, which rely on a drift and diffusion of electrons in their holes through semiconducting material, the memristor operation is basically an ionic movement similar to the ways human neural cells generate neural electrical signals. So that's great, man. I'm so excited. Where do we go? Where do we go from here? Well, I don't know. Here's two more. Here's a story from Hecty. We're measuring our kids' brains, and their brainwaves make them smarter. This is from May 11th, yesterday. Science has yet to invent a device that can read your mind, but that day is coming, and it's a lot closer than you think. Using galvanic skin response sensors, electroencephalographs, and cameras that track eye movements and record facial expressions, brain researchers already believe that they can tell when you're fascinated, bored, confused, or excited, angry, or serene. While the technology is far from flawless, it is good enough for companies like Procter & Gamble, universities like Harvard and Stanford, and branches of the U.S. military. Oh, all those groups are ones you should be wary of. And branches of the U.S. military to pour millions, and I'm sure that that's quote-unquote DARPA, millions into wiring people up and trying to find out what's really going on inside of their brains. Now, the small but rapidly growing neurotech industry, oh, there's a new one for you, wants to use these tools to help make our kids smarter. Yes, line up your children. By combining brain measurement with educational games, quote unquote, educational games, they hope to identify the barriers to learning and automatically overcome them. It is an audacious idea with huge potential, yes, and lots of money to be made, I'm sure, even if its effectiveness is still in question and the challenges from parental to acceptance to privacy concerns are daunting. Not so long ago, encephalographs cost tens of thousands of dollars. Now you can buy a simple consumer-grade EEG headset from companies like Emotive. We talked about them. Intra Exon and Neurosky for anywhere between $100 to $500. And these gadgets not only measure your brain waves, but can also be used as control devices, such as to manipulate objects on a computer screen, or we've also seen be able to remote control drones. I think these are similar to the devices that they were talking about utilizing on pilots once they have the remotely controlled airplanes as well. For example, Crooked Tree Studios' Throw Trucks With Your Mind video game uses an inexpensive Neurosky headset. You pick up vehicles and hurl them simply by concentrating. And with Uncle Milton's Star Wars The Force Trainer 2 toy, you don a headset and try to raise a holographic X-Wing fighter out of a swamp. InterExon just released version 2 of its Muse headset and mobile app, which trains you to relax your mind via a series of guided meditation exercises. People run away screaming from any of this technology. You know, don't think that they're not taking any of that data that they're collecting through those headsets, through those video games, and putting that into a database somewhere. We already found out from Paul Joseph Watson that cameras are watching your dong. You know, they're using that facial recognition software in your video games, in your Xbox, in your television, anything that now has cameras and sensors that can peer into your world, and they are putting that into a database. There's a video here. We got a couple minutes. We might play the beginning of this. This is from CNET.
Today on Future Tech, we're talking about mind control, which, as it turns out, sometimes means getting control of your own mind. I know it sounds sci-fi, but it's a reality, and this is just one of the devices making it happen. And NeuroSky is one of the companies behind the futuristic technology. They've developed a type of headset that actually reads your brain waves, or EEG.
Oh, that's fine.
This appears to be my brain.
This is your brain, like, what? Digitized.
Okay.
So the first thing you're going to notice is that white line, which is called the raw EEG signal. Uh-huh. And that's just a completely unfiltered reaction of the electrical energy that's coming off of your forehead.
Then, using sophisticated algorithms, the software takes the data from my brain and shows my mental state.
You are very attentive.
Oh, my God. This takes the data from your brain. And even said, this is your brain digitized. But it takes the data from her brain and shows her mental state. How long is it going to be before we're all required to wear our NeuroSky headbands? I mean, this is just nuts.
Individual.
From there, I can start training my mind.
I can see my brain doing things.
This is where yoga practitioners can be really good, because they can just...
I mean, every time you get angry, it's going to be like one of those dog collars. Every time you get angry, you're going to get an electrical zap to the forehead. You know, and it's going to use Pavlovian responses to try to make us a less violent society. I mean, that's Agenda 21, Buck Rogers in the 21st century. Scary stuff.
Turn it on and just lower the heart rate, lower the metabolism, and be relaxed.
And it's all done with this little headset and clip-on earpiece. So just logistically, like, how is this talking to this? Is it Bluetooth?
The way that it works is that your body gives off electrical signals, and we make instruments that measure that, and then via Bluetooth it communicates with the device.
Should we, like, take this baby for a ride? By this baby, I guess I mean my brain.
So, Molly, what you're playing here is a game called Focus Pocus. It's a very fun game around attention, relaxation.
First, I grew a plant with my mind. Deep breaths, everyone. It makes me really nervous to think about relaxing. Who's that guy? Paradoxically, I seem to relax more when I talk.
In the video game, when she didn't relax, a little demon popped out in front and her plants died. We only got a couple minutes left, so I don't want to go too much more into this because I have one more story I want to get to. But look at how they're doing this. They're using these games that make it look like it's just so much fun and, oh, hook your kid up and let us get all these readings from your child's mind and throw it into our database to perfect our technology that's going to be enslaving you. Don't think that that isn't going to happen. You're going to have to wear one of these. I know it. At some point in the future, we're all going to have to wear one of these to, I don't know, protect us from road rage. All right, let's go to this last story. 9 jobs that humans may lose to robots. It says, are humans becoming obsolete in the workforce? All signs point to yes. As IBM Watson has proven on Jeopardy, robots are becoming smarter than people. They may make fewer mistakes and they don't get bored. Yeah, they don't take sick days or vacations or need health insurance either. By 2013, so this is a little bit older article, there will be 1.2 million industrial robots working worldwide. And that is one robot for every 5,000 people on planet Earth. Founder of How Stuff Works says, robots are currently analyzing documents, filling prescriptions, and handling other tasks that were exclusively done by humans in the past. All right, let's go through these jobs. Job number one, pharmacist. The next time you drop off a prescription, you might see a robot behind the counter. Number two, lawyers and paralegals. Instead of paying an army of lawyers and paralegals to review your documents, software can do the job in a fraction of the time for a fraction of the cost. Number three, drivers. Google announced it was working on its automated cars, a way to increase safety and help humans reduce the time commuting to work. Self-driving cars are going to be the savior of man, I'm sure. Number four, astronauts. Through a partnership with General Motors, NASA's Robot 2 is the latest example of Android technology that they will be hoping to send to space. And I think they did, actually. Store clerks. companies. So that's number five, I think. Companies are increasingly looking for ways to sell more products with fewer employees. We have ATM machines, reduce the need for tellers, virtual assistants answer questions, and service machines reducing the need for checkout clerks. There was also some video from a few weeks ago in Japan, I believe, of the new store clerks that answer questions that are like Android-ish and look very, very lifelike. Number six, soldiers. Of course, we knew this one, and I would also say police force. Although soldiers have yet to be replaced by an army of robots, we seem to be moving in that direction as drones and other machines are increasingly being used in reconnaissance and combat missions. Number seven, babysitters. Now, this one was kind of frightening to me, but they don't mention it here, but I would also say robots for elderly care as well, convalescents. If there's anything we've learned from Hollywood, it's that robots are not only deadly weapons, but they're also great for entertainment. Ha ha ha. Aeon, a Japanese retailer, introduced the 4 foot tall yellow and white robot at stores in 2008, whose job it is to babysit children while adults shop. Number eight, rescuers. Robots reach areas that are inaccessible to humans and can provide crucial help in rescuing victims from natural disasters. And with rescuers, we've also seen many of those rescue bots have also included in their bullet point on their propaganda sheet that they'll be good for surveillance as well. And number nine, sports writers and other reporters. What? Yes, we don't need independent investigative journalists anymore. Let's just give it up to the robots. Using software developed by Northwestern University, narrative science specialists in machine-generated stories. One of their customers, the Big Ten Network, which is partially owned by Fox Cable, says it uses this service for baseball and softball coverage because it is cheaper. It's considerably less expensive for us to go this route using robots than for us to try to have our own beat reporters at the end of each one of these games, says Mike Calderon, Big Ten's director of new media, tells Bloomberg Businessweek. After a game, scorekeepers email game data to narrative science, which feeds it into a computer and spits out a story in minutes. So there you go, people. The truth will be written by a robot. And we'll be this is just unreal. This is one of my red buttons we haven't touched on in a while, and we might have to continue tomorrow because I didn't even get anywhere near being done. All right, guys, well, we got about 20 seconds left of the show. It is Tuesday, I believe. Yes, it is Tuesday. So make sure you stick around tonight. It's always a good night. Mr. Kevin Blanch is live up next. Then we have Chuck Ocelli and the Ocelli Effect live at 6. Against the Wall Recall with JJ at 8. Primer Time live at 9 with Michael and Nick. Prepper Chicks, we're going to do Prepper Chicks Morning Show at 10. And Anti-Media Radio with SM Gibson live at 11. All right, guys, everybody have an awesome Tuesday, and I will catch up with you tomorrow. Everybody take care.